Today on Maine Calling, libraries and authors help you with your summer reading list. The statewide summer reading program, Read Me, unofficially kicks off today with this Maine Calling program. Read Me is a partnership between the Maine State Library, Maine Humanities Council, and the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, an effort to get book lovers all over Maine reading and discussing the same books at the same time. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we meet the authors involved in Read Me 2023. Journalist Colin Woodard is with us. He made the selections this year. They are Night of the Living Res by Morgan Talty, and Lungfish by Megan Gillis. Talty and Gillis are here as well to talk about their work and make recommendations themselves. What books are you excited about? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible by Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at WelchForbes.com. By Maine Seacoast Mission, strengthening Maine's coastal and island communities through education, health, and support. Learn more at seacoastmission.org. And by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn.
This is Maine Calling, and I'm Jennifer Rooks. Readers, this is your day, the annual Read Me kickoff. That Read Me program is a partnership between the Maine State Library, Maine Humanities Council, and Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. Each year, organizers select one well-known Maine author to recommend books by two other Maine authors, and the goal is to get people reading and discussing these fine works. Well, today we have all three featured authors as our guests. Colin Woodard is a journalist and author of six books, including American Nations, a history of the 11 rival regional cultures of North America. He selected this year's Read Me books. And I should say Read Me is Read M-E, like Maine, Read Me. Anyway, the books are Lungfish by Megan Gillis and Night of the Living Res by Morgan Talty. Talty, a citizen of the Penobscot Nation, is an assistant professor at the University of Maine. His writing has garnered many awards, including a big one. This year, the National Book Critics Circle named Night of the Living Res the best debut book in any genre. And in addition to writing, Megan Gillis has been a journalist, bookstore owner, and librarian. Lungfish is her first novel. Well, we welcome all of you for joining us today. Megan, Morgan, Colin, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And we invite you in the conversation. Let us know if you've read either Night of the Living Res or Lungfish, or tell us what books you're looking forward to reading this summer, or give us your recommendation. Send an email, a brief email, please, to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Colin, I'm starting with you. When you got this assignment, pick two books by Maine authors. Were you excited or terrified, somewhere in between?
I was. I saw it as a wonderful opportunity because I work in nonfiction and, as a journalist and now as a think tanker. And that means that my reading table is always piled up with books that I have to read for whatever I'm working on. I'm learning about something. I'm backgrounding a person. I'm, trying to figure out a problem. So I don't get to read as much fiction as I would like to. And I knew that this would give me an opportunity to do some of that. And so I was very pleased to be able to prioritize that and to dig into. I read a whole bunch of really great books, both fiction and nonfiction, about Maine or from Maine authors. And it was a joy to discover both of these books early on and to be recommending them.
All right. Well, tell us about them. What resonated for you and why did you choose these two books?
Absolutely. Well, Morgan's book deserves all the national acclaim it's been getting. For me, I grew up in North Franklin County in a very small town. And on one hand, it captures so well What it's like to grow up in the hard scrabble parts of rural Maine. There's poverty and abuse and addiction and tedium that can grind people down and exhaust people in so many ways. And the land is often, beautiful and sustaining and terrible. You know, it can provide for you and your family, maybe if you work at it well, can also, destroy you and freeze you to death or all of that other stuff at the same time. And where people, though, even those who are in, damaged states or ground down, do try to look out for each other. Some people can do it well. Some people are trying to do it. And that was just so much of my experience growing up in rural Maine. And the book just captured all that so well. I mean, I felt like I knew that part really well. But not being a member of the Penobscot Nation and not being from Indian Island, that just added this other overlay over something that was so familiar to me that, that was completely different. Like, Gabriel Garcia Marquez had done a, phantasmagorical shift on top of my reality that, bent it closer to the truth. And yet you knew it was all real in the same way. And so as a reader, not from the Penobscot Nation, but who knew rural Maine, which I think a lot of our listeners will, and a lot of the people who are participating in Read Me will, that combination just kind of knocks your socks off. And, I just loved it. It's, it's raw and it's powerful and it's loving and very much about characters and universally human, and takes place in this environment that not all of us are as familiar with, but at the same time, aspects of it we really are. So I just really loved all that. It was electrifying. And Megan's book, Lungfish, I hate the cliches you hear about, how you couldn't put it down, but I happened to be reading Megan's book when I was doing transcontinental travel. And I left Los Angeles, LAX, picking up the book. And literally, like, I touched down in Portland and, was still reading it and didn't even notice the flight go by. And I'd made a connection in Newark or somewhere. I mean, I was that involved and at grips with it because it's immersive. It's this beautiful, ominous, harrowing novel that captures, there's a lot of things in it. I mean, there's family and love and addiction, but there's also this ominous chain of how everyone is maybe a few reasonable seeming steps that don't pan out away from ending up in an incredibly perilous situation. In this case, the possibility of, you and your child dying of starvation out on some remote island. I mean, there's all these things rolled in there. So it's got nature in it. It's got family elements. And it also has this, sort of ominous element, which, the main character is in effect a single parent with a toddler in increasingly harrowing circumstances, but it's kind of quietly building up on the character, sort of like a frog boiling in the water, and you're not sure if the character is seeing it coming as well as maybe you do, which only adds to the sort of tension. And if you're a parent, the sort of compelling and visceral feelings as the options are closing down and things are sort of narrowing. But it's a, it's a beautiful, wonderful, and warm-hearted novel.
Wow, Colin. Wonderful, wonderful descriptions. Megan, I'm going to turn to you. Our listeners have met Morgan before. He's been on Maine Calling before. Your first time to Maine Calling. Tell me how Lungfish came to be. Did it start as a short story? Did you start it and put it down and come back to it? You've had so many careers, clearly been writing for a long time, but had to do other things to make a living in between. Tell us the story of Lungfish.
Hi, yeah, thank you for having me here. I feel like I've finally made it as a Mainer. I'm on Maine Calling today, so it feels like a big moment for me. It also happens to be my 40th birthday, so I feel like this is a
great... happy birthday.
Thank you, yeah. So I feel like, talking about the origins of a book have taught me that there are so many different ways to tell a truth. I could tell you totally different stories and they would all be, I think, true. But I think maybe the truest version I can give you is that I was, I had been writing short stories for a long time. I had never imagined writing a novel, but when my daughter was very young and I was in a marriage to somebody who was experiencing an addiction that I wasn't familiar enough with to know how to handle, I was sort of navigating the the isolation and the strangeness of both of those conditions. And the book began as sort of like a fictional journal. I was having these experiences of the world that felt so foreign, and they were kind of bad, but they were also really interesting to me. And I just, it was almost like an alternative to doing like reaching out for help to anybody else, because I was just like, I'm going to figure this out on my own by creating this fictional universe with these fictional characters. And I'm going to sort of put them in these conditions that I'm sort of heightening by sort of condensing them and smashing them together. You know, the setting in this book is very particular, and there's this fear of homelessness bearing down on the characters. And, you know, as a person living in Portland, I would say that's another pressure that was on me. Always, I think we're all struggling with this, like, where on earth are we going to live next when I can't afford this place anymore? So the book just became a way to park those feelings in really small increments. As a parent, I only had a few minutes at a time to write. So I began writing these kind of super distilled scraps at a time, and then they just sort of aggregated and eventually, after a lot of really painful revision, turned into this novel.
Well, congratulations. Congratulations on being chosen. And to you, Morgan, since the last time we talked, all these awards, all this attention. And I'm wondering if you can tell us, for those who didn't hear you on the show before, about your series of short stories, not a novel, and about David and Dee, the protagonists, and where they came from.
Yeah, so Night of the Living Res is narrated by David and Dee, sort of the same person. And, you know, it's a series of 12 stories that alternate. So we'll have David narrating, we'll have Dee, who's an older version, narrating, and so forth and so on. And each story sort of stands alone. And ultimately, there's, at least for me, there's always this question of what happened. You know, how did these people get to where they got to? And it's sort of this climb, you know, there's this narrative arc to it, I feel, that is in the entire book, but isn't necessary to the collection. I like to think of it as like a sort of like a novel has a power line that you see above the ground, and, you know, interconnected story collections have that power line, but it's oftentimes buried and it's not sort of in sight. But yeah, these characters came about, you know, I wrote the title story, Night of the Living Res, back in 2015, just as a story for a workshop. And between then and when I went into the Stone Coast MFA, which is a really great program out of the University of Southern Maine, I had written a couple more. And, you know, I went in and I was like, I'm going to write a story collection. And so I did. I wrote, you know, I had Night of the Living Res, I had Smoke's Last, and I had another story that didn't make it into the book. And David was just, it was all David at the time. And it was just David, you know, getting older in each story. And eventually, you know, I wrote 15 stories told by David's point of view, and I whittled it down to 10. And it moved from David as a young boy all the way to him as a young adult in Night of the Living Res. And I read it and I was like, this is terrible. This is like a terrible story collection. Nobody would ever like this type of thing, because it was not like a traditional story collection, nor was it interconnected in a way that had that power line running through it. And so I discarded it and I said, I'll go do something else. And I wrote what came out to be Burn. And Burn is the opening story with D. And when I was writing it, I wanted to say David, but I just put the letter D in as a placeholder. And I was like, I'll figure the guy's name out later. But I eventually stopped resisting. And I was like, well, wait, what if he goes by D? What if, you know, his name is, you know, what if this is David grown up? And then the question became, what happened? And so I started writing and I started trying to figure out, you know, what went wrong while not escaping the boundaries of the short story, you know, the form of it that I wanted to do. And I don't know how, but I wound up where I did with the book, you know, being as it was. I tend as a writer just to swat at stuff until it works out. And that could take days, weeks, months, years. And in this case, it took years to get this one right.
I love knowing that. I having read the stories, I love knowing where Dee came from. And boy, that first story just grabs you right off the bat. You know, talk about not being able to put a book down, thinking you'll dip into something for just a little while, and then you're still reading and reading and reading. What was I going to say? I wanted to ask you before we go to a break, Morgan. Colin obviously chose your book and connected with it, having grown up in rural Maine, but having gotten national attention, I'm wondering if what you're hearing from readers here in Maine is different from what you're hearing from people in other parts of the country. Is the experience of reading Night of the Living Res a different one depending on your own background?
I would say definitely, yeah. I think depending where you come from, how you've lived, you know, all of those things affect how you relate to a book, you know, because art is so subjective. But I think, you know, this is just me as a writer, and I think it's obviously has worked out well. But like, for me, like, you know, my starting point of all storytelling is like the common thing that binds us all together as human beings, the thing that makes us all similar, unless we're sociopaths, is the fact that we can feel, right? Is the fact that we know what sadness is, we know what happiness is, we know what all of those emotions are. And so it's like, if you build a story with that as the foundation, you're going to have readers connect to it in some way. They're going to have some memory, some notion of an idea or an experience that connects them to that story. And so everybody has always had a different sort of, you know, I've had people talk about how much they loved it, and I've had people be like, I don't know how much I care about this book, but they've related to it in a way because they've felt, and like, that's how I approach fiction, is like through emotion. Like, that's the best part.
We have to go to a break, and I haven't even asked for your recommendations, so we'll get to those in a little while. In the meantime, this is our annual Read Me show on Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are talking about a statewide program that attempts to get readers from all over Maine reading the same two books. And we are about to get to some other recommendations as well. Joining me for the hour, Colin Woodard, who is a journalist and author of six books, including American Nations, A History of 11 Rival Regional Cultures of North America. Megan Gillis, her debut novel is Lungfish. Morgan Talty, whose debut short story is short story collection, a little tongue twister there, is Night of the Living Res. And those were Colin's selections for this year's Read Me. If you walk into your library, you'll be able to check them out. Many libraries are holding special reading groups, discussion groups around these books. Share your comments and questions about these books or others to email at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Before we go to calls, though, I'm going to ask Morgan and Megan, I'm going to ask each of you for one more recommendation, and then we'll get to more recommendations later on. But Morgan, go. Start us off with one big recommendation.
One big recommendation I'd say would be Chain Gang All-Stars by, I can't pronounce his name fully, but Nana Quaim, whose short story collection, Friday Black, won the Penn Jean Stein Award when it came out a few years ago. It's a fantastic novel. I don't want to spoil any of it, but it's really, truly something. And so get Chain Gang All-Stars and read it and read it again.
Okay, Megan, your turn.
Okay, go. Yeah, I guess the book I would start with for any nature lovers out there would be The Nature Book by Tom Komoda, which is a literary supercut in which they have gathered scraps from over 300 books. All of these are descriptions of nature. So the book is entirely humanless in some ways. There are no human characters. We just see the earth in its various forms sort of heaving and roiling and calming and then rising back up. It's fascinating to see how the author has patched this all together. And there's this also just this a lovely awareness of our inability to separate the natural world from our experience of it, because by default in these descriptions of nature, there is inherently subjective language. So the human presence is there as an intermediary as you experience the world. But it's just, it's very moody. It doesn't lack any drama. It sort of reflects the ups and downs of emotional experience that I think is baked into all of us as humans. So even by reading this book that is entirely centered on the natural world, we still have this emotional experience that we can relate to as humans.
Thank you for both of those. We'll get more in a little while. On the line now is Ann Leahy. She is executive director of Mechanics Hall in Portland. Ann, thanks for calling. And explain to me why we're having a call from somebody at Mechanics Hall on our show about books.
Thank you so much for having us on the show, Jennifer. I appreciate it. And yes, it's a really great question. Mechanics Hall, it's a nationally significant landmark building on Congress Street here in Portland, and our mission is to make knowledge, ideas, and arts accessible. And in recent years, we've transformed from an underused gathering space to a significant player in Portland's downtown art and culture scene, and specifically around literary programming and literary events. So authors near and far are lining up to host their events at Mechanics Hall Historic Library and Ballroom. Our library has been part of the ReadsMe program for several years. We love participating. I love both of these books, both Megan and Morgan's book. And in 2022, we hosted more than 50 literary programs and book launches.
Wonderful. Why don't you give us a couple? I know you have a lot coming up. We don't have time to list them, but what are a couple that you're really excited about that are coming up?
Sure. Yeah, we've got a couple. Journalist Shannon Mullen will be in conversation with Governor Janet Mills about Mullen's book, In Other Words, which tells the moving story of the correspondence between Mills and her constituent Arisha Knapp during the COVID pandemic. That's moderated by Senator Angus King. Keziah Weir, who is a senior editor at Vanity Fair, her fantastic debut novel, Mythmakers, was featured in yesterday's New York Times as a summer pick. Gretchen Charrington in conversation with Bob Keyes about her book, The Butcher, the Embezzler, and the Fall Guy, a family memoir of scandal and greed in the meat industry. Kate Shetterly's newest book, Pete and Alice in Maine, which perfectly captures that summer of 2020. Folks from New York were escaping to Maine. And she'll be joined by Joanna Rakoff, author of My Salinger Year, and I think Kate's with you today, so I'll let her share more. A terrific read. And lastly, I'm really excited to share that along with our friends at Print a Bookstore, we'll actually be hosting Celeste Eng on August 21st. Celeste is only doing 4 book events this summer. She really wanted to come to Portland, so we're thrilled to make that happen for our literary community.
Most of our
literary programs are free and to attend, and you can learn more about them at mainmechanicshall.org and on our Instagram page.
Annie, thanks for calling in and sharing all that with us. Annie Leahy, Executive Director of Mechanics Hall in Portland. And as Annie mentioned, with us now, Caitlin Shetterly, her new novel, Pete and Alice in Maine, comes out on the 4th of July. Caitlin, add to what we've already heard about your new novel, and congratulations.
Thank you so much. Hey, Jen, nice to talk to you again, and thanks for asking me to call in. Thank you, Annie, and hi, Colin, Morgan, and Megan. So nice to hear all your voices.
Hi.
Hey, how is everybody?
Good.
Good. My book, Jen, is Pete and Alice in Maine. It's my first novel. It's my fourth book, but my first novel, and it's coming out on July 4th, as you said, from HarperCollins. And it's the story of a New York City couple and their two daughters who flee to their second home in Maine during the spring of 2020, when, as those of us who live in Maine remember, everywhere remember, COVID descended. And they are reeling from a painful betrayal in their marriage and trying to get sort of hang together during this extraordinary time in world history. And I really wrote the book because a lot of people were escaping to my home state, our home state of Maine, in the early months of COVID. And I'd go out running and see Massachusetts and New York and New Jersey license plates. And at first it annoyed and worried me, as you know, and everyone listening here in our great state knows, Maine is a poor and aging state. And we don't have many hospital beds. We didn't have enough ventilators. We were rationing toilet paper. And, you know, I was born and raised here, and so was my husband. And like many Mainers, we do a lot of odd jobs to keep body and soul together. So we were really paying attention to what was happening. But then the more I thought about it, I wanted to know what those people with the out-of-state license plates, whom I perceive to have more privilege than many of us here have, were fleeing beyond just COVID. What about their lives prompted them to want to find refuge here in Maine? And so one night, the character of Alice just came to me. I was down by the fridge, and my husband was up in bed, and she started talking, and she insisted I write her down. And I wrote the book for exactly 1 year, and then the book was done, and then we went out with it. And I aimed to write a really honest book about marriage, family life, being a Gen X woman, the experiences of young girls in a family with problems. And really more deeply, I wanted to write a book about America during a specific time in our history when Trump was our president, George Floyd was murdered, and COVID had grounded all of our lives. And I just really hope that readers will say to themselves, oh, finally someone understands me, and that they feel I'm their friend, because I really feel like we all need friends in books, especially in the summer, which is why I was so excited to be asked to call in on this program, because it's great to recommend all these amazing books.
And Caitlin, congratulations on your own novel, and we're going to ask you for a recommendation before we say goodbye. What do you want to recommend?
Well, this summer, I'm going to finish reading David Copperfield, and you probably know where I'm going with this, because I put it down several years ago. I'm the mother of two sons, and it was so painful for me to read. I had a really hard time getting through with it. It's the one of those Dickens books that I always intended to read and never did. So I'm in the process of reading that, and I'm going back and forth between that and Barbara Kingsolver's Demon Copperhead. And I'm finding this to be an amazing and eye-opening and poignant experience. And I'm just loving fast-forwarding back and forth through time.
Well, Caitlin, thank you so much. Caitlin Shetterly's new novel, Pete and Alice in Maine, comes out on July 4th. Colin?
My recommendations?
Go ahead.
Yeah, one that I would recommend is Thomas Urquhart's book, Up for Grabs, Timber Pirates, Lumber Barons, and the Battles Over Maine's Public Lands. You know, I wrote a book, The Lobster Coast, that was dealing with Maine's history and what makes Maine and Mainers tick. But at this point in the sort of, you know, second quarter of the 19th century, the story of coastal Maine, the story of the interior of Maine, where I grew up, start diverging, and Lobster Coast doesn't take that turn into the interior. Well, this, you know, book digs in and tells a story. In fact, you know, does the archival work to understand the vast Maine interior, especially, you know, the public lands that eventually became our industrial forest and the sort of paper plantations. But how that all happened and the battle over it. And it's a story of, you know, generations of mishandling things early on, and the legislature being asleep when we left Massachusetts and lost opportunities, and then efforts to claw some of that back. And it's one of those stories that somebody would have to go into the archives and painstakingly reassemble it. And Urquhart has done that for us. So it's it's an excellent contribution to Maine's history from Down East Books. So it's even a Maine published book.
Yeah, and thanks for that recommendation. I'll mention that Urquhart was on Maine Calling in 2021. So if anybody wants to go into our archives, they can listen to an interview about that. And I agree, really interesting. Learned a great deal about the state. Going to Scott, who's calling from New York City. But Scott, I understand you're originally from Maine. Hi.
Yes, good morning, Jen. Nice to hear your voice and nice to hear everyone on the show. I'm Scott Bain, and my book is A Union Like Ours, The Love Story of F.O. Matheson and Russell Cheney, which came out last summer from the University of Massachusetts Press, Brightleaf Imprint, which specializes in books about New England, and the audiobook was released in December of last year. The book is the story of an early 20th century same-sex couple, F.O. Matheson and Russell Cheney, who lived in Kittery, Maine from 1930 to 1945. Matheson was an influential literary scholar based at Harvard, while Cheney was a prolific painter. And my thesis is that Matheson and Cheney were in essence married in everything but name and legal rights. At one point, Matheson even uses the word marriage in a letter to Cheney to describe their partnership. They met in 1924 on an ocean liner going across the Atlantic and remained a couple up until Cheney's death in 1945. Cheney's best paintings were of southern Maine, near where he and Matheson made their home. And I understand that next summer there's going to be an exhibition of Cheney's work at the Algonquin Museum of American Art. The book doesn't shy away from their respective struggles. Cheney suffered from tuberculosis and alcoholism, while Matheson wrestled with depression. And Matheson ultimately took his own life in 1950, 5 years after Cheney's death. This said, I don't read the book as a complete downer. These two men figured out a way to share their lives nearly 100 years before Congress passed the Respect for Marriage Act protecting same-sex partnerships, and Maine was the critical backdrop for their love story.
Well, Scott, thank you so much. Congratulations to you. Great recommendation, especially on the second day of Pride Month. Thank you so much. We'll go to Kevin calling from Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Kevin.
And good morning, Jen. This is Kevin St. Jar. I've written a book called Parrish, California. The town is completely fictional, but I've had several readers tell me that they recognize their own town in it. It's a satirical look at people moving to a small coastal town because they say the town is absolutely perfect the way it is. And then as soon as they move in, they begin a very strenuous effort to change it to the place they just escaped. But it doesn't just poke fun at people from away. It also is an examination of how locals react and how all of us are dealing with sort of this increased feeling of territorialism. And it features a retired gentleman with a new younger neighbor, and through their conversations and their observations, we take a look at human behavior.
Well, Kevin, thanks for calling in. Parrish, California is the book. Congratulations to you. An email here from Heidi. Morgan, you wrote the most beautiful book. It really moved me and opened my eyes to another way of life. I've shared my copy with so many people who've all loved it. I even took it with me to New Zealand recently and shared it with friends there. Huge fan. And Kartika on Facebook says, I'm a Maine Humanities Council discussion facilitator. Have both these books in my possession. I finished Lungfish and look forward to rereading it. I've read a couple chapters of Night of the Living Res and look forward to reading the whole book. Fabulous choices, tough subjects. Megan Gillis's writing is almost poetic. Thank you, Colin Woodard, for your solid picks. There you go, Colin. You can. We're on Zoom. He's taking a bow. We'll go to Hannah calling from South Portland. Hi, Hannah. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say, I mean, everyone on this panel is a literary celebrity to me. And I really just love Lungfish and Night of the Living Res so deeply. And I'm so thankful for those books. And my own first book was published a month ago. It's about abortion doula work and community abortion care. And much of it is set against, you know, backdrops of communities in Maine and abortions that are happening and being, you know, provided and supported in Maine. And it's called You Are Someone You Would Love, Reflections of an Abortion Doula. I would love if, you know, folks would request it from their library or pick up a copy, especially if there's someone in their life who they've supported through an abortion or might one day, you know, want to or need to. And I also just wanted to say happy birthday to Megan while I'm here.
Megan.
Thank you, Hannah. Yes, You or Someone You Love is, I think, a must read for everyone who is living. Hannah does such a great job of exploring the nuances of abortion, the various impacts that it has on people's lives, the various reasons they might make that choice. And I just think whatever your political beliefs are, you can learn something from this book about what it is to be a human and what it is to be to support other humans in meeting them where they are and looking for ways to help. And if you are a listener of books, Hannah recorded the audiobook herself, and I just finished listening to it, and she does such a beautiful job.
Congratulations, Hannah. We are going to get more recommendations in just a minute. Get your pens out. Well, actually, we're going to post the list later, so doesn't matter that much. But if you want to have the recommendations right away. And if you have a recommendation, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or find us on social media. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today, we are talking about Read Me. The program is a partnership between the Maine Humanities Council, the Maine State Library, and Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. And the whole goal is to get everybody in Maine reading the same book at the same time and talking about it. This year, author and journalist Colin Woodard had the honor of selecting Lungfish by Megan Gillis and Night of the Living Res by Morgan Talty. They are all here with us. What do you want to recommend? Send us a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Find us on social media or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Okay, another round of recommendations. Megan, I'll start with you.
Okay. I don't often read off the best seller list, but I am currently reading An Immense World, How Animal Senses Reveal the Hidden Realms Around Us by Ed Yong, and I recommend it to everybody. My own novel deals a lot with what we can and cannot see and how that shapes our lives and the ways we move through our world. And this book does such an amazing job of illuminating this concept of Umwelten, which is this idea that, all of us as individuals and as species have a certain set of senses that are available to us, and they are not shared, they are not universal, and there is so much going on in the fabric of our world that we just cannot see or hear or feel or understand, which I think just makes the world feel so much richer, so much more full of mystery, and also, compels us to be a little bit more compassionate towards everything around us. Thank it's full you. Of science. I can't repeat back any of the science, but the ideas are amazing.
Morgan Talty.
Yeah, if you're looking for a story collection or a story collection, especially a story collection that features indigenous characters, I have to highlight Chelsea T. Hicks's story collection, A Calm and Normal Heart. It's just such a phenomenal story collection. There's just so much range in it. I feel like the stories are so lively. The characters are so lively. You know, there's just a deep sense of appreciation for humanity throughout that book. But there's also, Chelsea does this phenomenal job of, incorporating and finding opportunities to sort of comment on being indigenous. And when I say being indigenous, I don't mean it necessarily in a broad way, but in a way that is kind of like unique to the characters in those moments. Reading her book as a Native person, I found myself being like shocked by sort of the profoundness that she writes with, about what it means to appear Native, for example. How is it we walk and, sort of come across as Indigenous when we don't look, what does it mean to look Indigenous? How do we appeal to that, right? And the stories are just, they're not necessarily about what it means to be Native, but she does such a good job shying away from offering readers just this comfortable, colorful tour of Indian country, but nonetheless is capable of articulating what I would say are things that I've never really been able to articulate about humanity and being Indigenous at the same time.
Wonderful recommendation. Colin Woodard.
Well, as I said, my night table is often stacked with what I'm working on. And of late, I'm on sabbatical from the Press Herald and running a think tank project called Nationhood Lab at nationhoodlab.org, which is at the Pell Center at Salve Regina University down in Newport, Rhode Island. Essentially, it builds off my most recent three books, American Nations, and the other two that came after it. So it deals with the problems of American nationhood. How do you construct and maintain and keep any kind of shared notion of ourselves as a people in addition to our diversity and the threats to that. You know, how do you hold the Federation together and on what terms? And so that work has me reading a lot of stuff. We have the 250th anniversary of the country and the Declaration of Independence coming up, and three books that are on my night table right now. They're a little bit eclectic, but all recent. One is Susan Eisenhower's How Ike Led, the Principles Behind Eisenhower's Greatest Decisions. Susan Eisenhower is a national security expert in her own right. Also, though, is Eisenhower's granddaughter and knew him, you know, in a family sense and a certain side of him, and then researched this book intensively on interviewing everybody that Ike came in contact with. And here's somebody who, you know, in a divisive time facing an existential showdown with the Soviet Union, had to hold the country together in a middle way. No one was even sure what party Ike belonged to before he was convinced to run for president. And he was a strategic thinker. He kept the sort of made the New Deal a long New Deal as a bipartisan project and did a lot of things that were sort of centering in the country. And understanding how he did that and strategically and also from another time when there was some sense of consensus, at least in Washington, about big investment priorities in the direction of federal policy is refreshing and interesting. There's Carl Bogus's Madison's Militia, The Hidden History of the Second Amendment. At Nationhood Lab, we just did a data journalism piece looking at the regional differences in gun violence per capita, which are absolutely staggering between, say, the Deep South and the greater New England space. So that got me reading this book by a law professor who is making a really a historian's case, a meticulously researched argument of what the Second Amendment was really about, tying it to Southern fears that militias to stop slave rebellions would somehow be demilitarized by the federal government. I haven't finished it, but it's a fascinating and deeply researched case digging into Madison and everyone else's thinking at the time. And then finally, Danielle Allen's Our Declaration, a reading of the Declaration of Independence in the defense of equality. So, you know, in the end, what our country, you know, our best shared vision of ourselves ties back to those ideals in the Declaration, but they're really poorly understood. That's one of our big problems. How do we define what America is supposed to be for and who belongs and where we came from and what our purpose is? It's all in the Declaration. And Danielle Allen, who's she's at Harvard University, just ended a long term as director of the Safra Center, has written this brilliant, sentence by sentence, thoughtful analysis of the Declaration that is beautifully written, poetic, and incredibly insightful, building into the case of equality that's built into the Declaration well beyond what you might think at first. So it's anyone who's thinking in advance of the 250th anniversary of the country about these big things, this is a book everyone should come to grips with.
All right. That, you just said 250th anniversary. That's in 3 years, isn't it?
Coming right up.
Wow. We'll go to Alex calling from Scarborough. Hi, Alex. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for this lovely show. I always appreciate something literary. And I wanted to recommend a local Maine poet, Jefferson Novicki, N-A-V-I-C-K-Y. He published two books during this time, which is pretty impressive, just being able to do that. And one is called, they're long titles, but you can find his work on his website, Head of Island Beautification for the Rural Outlands. That's the most recent, and he did a book launch where Betsy Scholl was asking him questions, really great question and answer session. The second book I wanted to recommend that he wrote is Antique Densities, Modern Parables and Other Experiments in Short Prose. And what I'll say is that I just feel that both of these books have a really inventive approach to writing. So if you're into language or words or the way things feel, they also allow us to play in kind of a sandbox, if you will, of emotions, memories, ambiguities, which I think is sort of perfect for this time coming out of this COVID period. And he's just an incredible writer, and I think I hope we can value him more. So thank you for letting me share that.
Alex, thanks for a poetry recommendation. Jefferson Nowicki, thank you so much for your call. I think that we have time to go through and get one more recommendation from each of you. So Megan, I'll go back to you.
Oh, all right. I'll recommend a novel. If you're looking for the kind of book that you can just pick up and barrel through in a few hours, just an absolute powerhouse, but slender novel, I would recommend Kick the Latch by Catherine Scanlon, which is it's a novel formed out of a very long interview that the author conducted with a woman who was involved in the horse racing industry for her entire life. And it just gives us this depiction of people and animals who are absolutely broken and remade by their environments. It's full of all of the love that makes this industry keep going and all of the pain, the ugliness. But it's like the book itself, the prose is just like a horse out of the gate. It just goes, and the language is so original that every sentence has you sort of gasping and hanging on.
Morgan.
Yeah, I'll go with a novel too, one that I think is like fantastic to, you know, just sit down and just devour, but also just has a real nice depth to it, is Sea Change by Gina Chung. It, you know, follows this character, Ro, who's in her 30s, and she's estranged from her mother. And, you know, this sounds all very familiar. And then, you know, we learn that her boyfriend has just left her to join a mission to Mars. So there's this like very familiar aspect of living, and then there's this, you know, futuristic element to it, and it's such a delightful book. You know, in many ways it kind of reminds me of Karen Russell in the ways that she's able to really make the unfamiliar feel so personal and known. So that's Sea Change by Gina Chung.
All right. And Colin, do you have one more in your pocket?
Hey, I gave you three, so I'd like to hear a power bonus round from Megan. And
Oh, my gosh. I told Colin before we got on the show that he could host Main Calling for us today, and I might let you take over. Megan, go ahead.
Well, Morgan mentioned Karen Russell, and I've been trying to wrap my head around The Changeling by Joy Williams, which of course has been out for decades, but which I finally just got around to reading. I don't know why I put it off for so long. And it's the kind of book that it's so strange and of its own. It's set on this island. We're mostly in the head of this character who is stranded out there amid the wealth of this family that she sort of got brought into a little bit unwillingly. And she's sort of vaguely in charge of watching over this pack of feral children. And she's a drunk, but she's a visionary. And our sense of what is real and unreal starts to merge. And then it stops mattering. And we're like understanding all of these truths of the universe. But then we're like, wait, are we crazy now? And Karen, I feel like it's the kind of book that I could only truly do justice to if I like wrote like a dissertation on it. I can't just like casually recommend it to people, but Karen Russell has given it a good shot. And the New Yorker, she wrote that like Ovid, Shakespeare, Toni Morrison, and God, Williams is interested in metamorphosis and the monstrosity of salvation. And she said a lot of other really wonderful things about the strangeness of the novel as well.
Okay, Morgan, one more.
Yeah, for those who are looking to get outside and read and sort of kind of connect with place and storytelling, I have to shout out Katie Holton's The Language of Trees, A Rewilding of Literature and Landscape. It's sort of, there's, you know, a lot of, it has an introduction from Ross Gay, and it features writings from a lot of contributors, but it's really this kind of like in-depth look at landscape and place along with storytelling. So for people who are like really interested in the intersection of place and the intersection of storytelling, she does this, she writes about them by celebrating and writing about trees. And it's just a phenomenal book for those who are fans of Braiding Sweetgrass, for example, by Robin Kimmerer, would really, really enjoy this.
Oh, that's a great tip. Almost every time we have a book show, Braiding Sweetgrass is recommended by multiple listeners. We have a Facebook comment here from Jill. My friend Michelle Shores wrote a book based on the first documented ghost story in New England in the early times of Franklin, Maine. It is called The Gathering Room, A Tale of Nellie Butler. It just recently won an IPPI Award. So there we go. Thank you, Michelle, for that recommendation. And that will be our last recommendation for the hour. We will get a list together, put a list together, hopefully not miss anything of books that were recommended on today's hour, and put that on the Maine Calling Facebook page and on the Maine Calling webpage. I want to thank our authors today for joining us. Colin Woodard, a journalist and author, as well as a writer with the Portland Press Herald and a director, as he mentioned, of the Nationhood Lab Project. Colin chose the selections for this year's Read Me program, and those selections were Lungfish by Megan Gillis, also with us today, and Morgan Talty, his book Night of the Living Res. Today's sound engineer, KG Akimoladun. You can visit mainecalling.org to find past shows and to subscribe to Maine Calling's weekly newsletter. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.